Everyone has their own unique views and needs when it comes to financial success. If you'd like to leave your financial woes behind and live a life of financial freedom, you've come to the right place. Welcome to the Saving with Steve Show, hosted by Steve Sexton. The show will help you with the ins and outs of money. We talk about financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars and keeping you up at night. We talk about money, tax reduction, saving more, spending less, 401ks, risk management, retirement, and everything under the sun that relates to you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. Now, here is your host of Saving with Steve, Steve Sexton.
Hey, welcome to the Saving with Steve Show, where we talk about the ins and outs of money, pretty much everything under the sun as it relates to you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. My name is Steve Sexton. I want to thank you for joining us today. Again, I want to thank you all for listening, sharing with your friends, your family. We just hit over 500,000 listeners, so we're really excited about that. We have a wonderful show for you today. In the latter half of the show, we all know that the U.S. economy is going nuts when it comes to real estate. In fact, according to Redfin, we've seen a 17% increase year on year just on the average real estate market price nationwide. That's $328,000. That's nuts. On top of that, if you list a house at a certain list price, you are likely to sell it for more than that list price, according to Redfin. It's crazy. Now, we have Andrew Ragusa. You probably heard of him. He's been on radio, TV, talks about everything real estate. He's going to be here to talk to us about what's going on with real estate. And if you're looking to get that offer through, he's going to give you some tips to make your offer stand out in a competitive marketplace. On top of that, everybody wants to answer this question is, how much do you need to retire? Big question. We're going to answer it for you later. But now I want to set the stage for our first guest. We all heard about GameStop back there in January. It just went crazy. That was the first time that you really saw crowdfunding and how it shifted from the status quo of investment culture of Wall Street and around the world. It was just real interesting because it was the first time regular everyday people got in on an investment. The reality, the door hasn't been open, isn't open to the average investor. A lot of times they're being denied opportunities to create wealth, equity around the world. Now, we have Mo Vella. He is a former White House senior advisor, businessman. Mo discusses how his new show, Unicorn, is bringing investing to the masses. So, Mo, welcome to the show. We're glad to have you.
Thank you, Steve. It's great to be with you.
Now, I'm really excited about this because you're creating an opportunity for people to learn, people to have an opportunity to learn how to invest.
That's right.
Advice from very influential people. So it's a really exciting show. What I'd like to do is just have you just talk about the premise behind Unicorn Hunters.
Absolutely. The show is called Unicorn Hunters. And the website, obviously, the platform is unicornhunters.com, Steve. It is exciting. And first of all, thank you for recognizing how exciting it is, because the premise of the show, the overall premise, is to democratize access to wealth creation. What does that mean in a practical sense, right? It means that the housewife in Nairobi, the grad student in Colombia, in Bogota, the midlife professional in Kansas City, right? Or anywhere in any corner of the world, for the first time, thanks to the Jobs Act here in the United States of 2012, we are now able to actually open it up through for accredited investors, right? Mm-hmm. And for non-accredited investors through crowdfunding. So we go through a broker dealer on the accredited side, and we go through a crowdfunding partner on the non-accredited side. What does that mean? That means now at our show every week, you get to meet a potential unicorn from a business perspective. They make their elevator pitch now to the world on our show. Rather than just a few investors like Shark Tank, for example, or the traditional pre-Jobs Act environment that you referenced, where only Wall Street types could invest in a pre-IPO private placement, we now are opening that up to the world for the first time.
I think that's thrilled. I think the most that's wonderful. The reason being is I've had so many people come to me. How can I get in on this EPA? How can I? Well, right. You know what? You have to be an institutional investor, and that's you're going to have to come up a whole bunch of money. And they're like, well, that doesn't work for me. And they usually get it way down the line after everybody's made all their money.
That's right.
And when it comes to accredited investors, those are people who have to have $1 million. That's why it's done through a broker dealer. And most people have $1 million, know what they're getting into.
That's
now,
right.
Through crowdfunding, what would be like the minimum investment somebody would be able to invest in one of the pre-IPOs?
At Unicorn Hunters, I'm so proud to tell you that the minimum investors for on the crowdfunding side will be $100.
Okay.
And we're doing that on purpose because it means a lot to us at Unicorn Hunters to be able to allow everybody to be a unicorn hunter. Now, let's be right up front, Steve. I know that you'll appreciate this piece of information. I think it's important for your listeners and your viewers anywhere in the world to understand, whether it's through Unicorn Hunters or any other place you make an investment in life or even gambling in Las Vegas, know your risk tolerance. Know your limitations. If $100 is going to keep you from paying your electric bill, do not do it, right? So let's be clear about that. The beauty of Unicorn Hunters is we are ultimately, eventually going to be a one-stop shop pre-IPO platform and media company that will educate, inform, and empower in an effort to equalize. So to your point, you're going to learn how to be an investor. You're going to understand risk tolerance. You're going to understand that there is a risk involved. Mm-hmm. So even if it's $100 or $1,000 or $10,000 or $1 million that you're going to invest, please, please do it wisely, do it strategically, and understand your personal limitations.
I agree with that, because if you're really going to invest in a pre-IPO, it would be very, very important to understand, hey, look, if I'm going to invest $100 and it goes away tomorrow, I need to be comfortable with that.
That's exactly right.
Now, on the same token, I know of people who've been involved in the pre-IPO stuff where they've actually put their $1 million in and they've ended up with 50 times that because it gets launched as an IPO. It does very well. And they don't just get rid of it right at the IPO. They hold on to it for a little bit longer.
That's right. A few people from Uber come to mind. I think a few people in Uber put in like $5,000 each and ended up with multiple millions. Now, that's probably the outlier and the anomaly, right? Mm-hmm. However, what we want everyone to have the chance to do is, if you want to learn how, then we want to equalize the playing field. So at least you will have the knowledge, the information, which in my eyes and in us at Unicorn Hunters, we believe information and knowledge is power.
Well, that's so true. I say that all the time. A more confident investor can take that monkey off the back, so to speak.
That's right.
And they could have a wonderful retirement as long as they understand where they're at. Now,
we're going to get rid of the jargon and the lingo, Steve. What I've learned in my career, whether it was my two tenures in the White House, as an attorney, as an entrepreneur, as an author, as the host of my own podcast, here's one thing I've learned across the board, regardless of where I was. Or what I was doing. And that is that people love to drop big words and fancy lingo and jargon to try to intimidate, frankly, and also to disenfranchise people. But this is what we're trying to take away, the fear of the investment process and the investment ecosystem. It's nothing to fear. If we all learn, we can all participate. Mm-hmm. And why shouldn't we, Steve? Why shouldn't we have the chance? If you're in a village in Italy or downtown in Buenos Aires, Argentina, or anywhere in the United States, why shouldn't you have the chance to participate?
I agree with that. In fact, it's really interesting. A number of friends are involved in microloans in a place like that. So somebody gets a $50, $60, $100 loan, yeah, they're going to pay it back sometime in the future, but it allows them to start a business.
Absolutely.
Now, for somebody with this, they're participating in a business and it's as little as $100, which could be 10 times that, 20 times that, or it could be zero at the end of the day.
All we can do at Unicorn Hunters is present these potential unicorns to the world and let them have the chance to share their story, their product, their service, their innovative technology, whatever the case may be. Each one of them has a story to tell. And we created a platform to allow them to share that with the world. And if somebody hears that and they read about it on our platform, and they learn more about this product, this service, this technology, whatever it is that company is presenting, then they can make their own decision. One thing I will share with you, Steve, is at Unicorn Hunters, we have what we call the circle of money. There are seven of us in the first season that sit at the circle of money. We are there in front of this potential unicorn as they make their presentation. On that panel, I am so proud to tell you.
Well, hey, I'm going to hold you on right there. We're going to have to take a break and we'll be
no problem. We'll come back with the panelists.
This is outstanding, so stick with us.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve show.
Don't let your financial woes keep you up at night and prevent you from living a life of financial and personal freedom. Hi, I'm Steve Sexton, host of the Saving with Steve show. We're going to be talking about the ins and outs of money, those financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars, causing stress, keeping you up at night. We're going to talk about money, tax reductions, saving more, spending less, your investments, risk management, retirement, and everything associated with you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. So if you've ever dreamed of living a life of financial and personal freedom, you owe it to yourself and your family to tune into the Saving with Steve show. Join me, Steve Sexton, on the Saving with Steve show as we talk about everything under the sun when it comes to money. To learn more about the show, visit SavingWithSteve.us.
Hello, welcome back. We're talking to Mo Bello about his show, Unicorn Hunters. I just want to truly thank you all for tuning in. I appreciate
you
letting your friends, family, and associates know about the show. All the replays are available.
That is here to help you achieve your financial goals.
If you're enjoying the story, the helpful information, insight on Saving with Steve, I encourage you to subscribe to our YouTube channel at Saving with Steve Sexton. Check out a few of our affiliates at UK Health Radio, BBS Radio, Talk Radio in New York City, E360 TV, Las Vegas TV Networks. All these networks are dedicated to empowering you to solve problems, uplift your spirit, and live a life of personal financial freedom. Mo, welcome back to the show. We were just getting so darn excited because we started talking and complimenting each other. We almost didn't go back on the air. So...
Well, I love that too, Steve, and I'm proud of everything you've accomplished, and I'm really happy that you are broadcasting your show in so many ways and on so many platforms to everyone around the world, because, you know, you and I both agreed earlier in the show, knowledge, information is power.
I have the saying, people don't know what they don't know, so if we can help them to ask questions that they wouldn't think or know to ask.
That's right.
Prudent, informed decisions that actually impact the quality of their life.
Absolutely. And so we left off talking about the circle of money, right?
Yes, here we go.
So each potential unicorn, as I was sharing, comes before the circle of money. It's seven of us on every episode of the first season, which, by the way, before I forget, starts to air on May 10th.
Oh, perfect.
May 10th. The first episode airs at www.unicornhunters.com. It'll also be on a variety of digital and streaming platforms, YouTube and Amazon Prime and several other places. But for sure, you know, May 10th, unicornhunters.com. First episode, and we will air an episode weekly after that.
Perfect.
So this circle of money, we, in essence, the seven of us, will be representing the world, right? All of you who will then get to watch it on the streaming platform. So I'm so excited to tell you who's in that circle of money.
Yeah, that's what I'm waiting for too.
No, I know. It's just mind-boggling. You have to understand, you've got this chubby, gay, bald, ugly little Latino guy from South Texas. That would be me, right? Sitting in the circle of money, a dream come true for me, right? Mm-hmm. And across the circle of money from me is Steve Wozniak, the Woz himself. Next to him is Lance Bass, famous, of course, from the phenomenal boy band NSYNC, but now an extremely successful investor, part of an investment group with I'll let Lance say it publicly, but a couple of very, very popular and famous NFL football players. Mm-hmm. So Lance Bass, the former United's treasurer, Rosie Rios.
Oh, wow.
It's amazing. It's amazing. But can you imagine the entire show, all the first episodes of the season one, I get to stare at the Woz and Lance Bass. Not a bad gig, huh, Steve?
But with those people, you know, Wozniak, Apple, I mean, the knowledge that he can impart on somebody who's going through this process is something else. Now, I've got to ask this. We have a viewers at Steve Sexton, and we teased a little bit about you coming on here, and somebody says, I have an idea. I have this thing. What would I need to do if I wanted to be one of the people thought about for the second season or the third season?
Thank you for asking that. I was like so excited about telling you about the show. I forgot to talk about the fact that in August we're shooting season two.
Oh, great.
12 episodes in season two that we'll be shooting in August. Great question. Look, I'm going to give out my email address. It's the easiest way, right? Just Moe at movela.com. Moe at movela.com. Very simple. I will get them to the right people at our production team and my colleagues at the show. That way they can get introduced to the system and be considered. But it's a great time for anybody. Let me give you a little bit of the criteria, Steve. So
please, that's the next question.
Right? The most important criteria is you have to have raised at least a couple of million dollars already for your company. Mm-hmm. And why is that important? Because you have already validators.
Okay. Right?
And it's important to have validators to be able to be on the show because these investors from around the world, thousands and thousands of them, I might add, that will be watching and listening and becoming a part of the, by the way, the Unicorn Hunters Investors Club, mm-hmm. which it's free to join. And that's the only way you can actually invest is to become a member of the club. So go to our site, get ready for what's coming. If you're a company that thinks is a potential, you're a potential unicorn, you want to be considered for the show, please make sure you've already raised through friends and family, but more importantly, hopefully from at least some high profile individual investor, a family office, some validator of some kind, maybe even already some venture capital money or angel investor money. If you have that, check that off. The next thing would be that you have an executive team, even if it's small, but that is ready to
get it. So let's help everybody understand what an executive team is, because I understand you've been validated. That means somebody's gone through their proof of process.
That's right.
Reliable, and now they have a team. What's an executive team? So somebody just say, I got...
It varies, right? Like in the first season, some of them have four people on their team already. Mm-hmm. Some of them have 40, right? Okay. But it's just, do you have a CEO or a COO or a CFO or a senior advisor that can come before the camera and make the pitch and be able to explain your viability, as you point out, the validation of the money you've already raised? And what are you going to use these $10, $20, $15, $25 million you're going to raise through the show? What will be the use of proceeds? What is that going to go toward business development? Is that going to marketing? Is that a go-to-market strategy? Is it to enhance your product? Is it to further your technology? Whatever the case may be, you need to come and make your pitch as to why you're raising money, how it will be used, and then ultimately explain your exit strategy, which hopefully involves an IPO.
And typically, what would somebody, like, for example, are they going to talk about, hey, look, we're going to raise this much money and we're giving that portion of the company to raise that money?
Absolutely. Okay. So each of these potential unicorns that come onto our show, the broker-dealer, of course, involved, is required by the SEC, of course, sits on our circle of money for the first season. That will all be determined. Each company has their own terms, of course, right? Mm-hmm. And all that will be handled through the broker-dealer as is appropriate and required if you're an accredited investor. And the same thing if you are a non-accredited investor, you go through the crowdfunding partner of ours. Again, the terms will be determined by each potential unicorn company, and they will vary company by company, right?
So I think
all of that will be spelled out and very clear to every investor around the world who wants to participate.
I love the fact that you have a representative from the broker-dealer.
Absolutely.
With you, because that means that they've done all the appropriate information's being provided for their you know, it's called a red herring, but they're offering for that. So hey,
that's right,
got a proof of process, here's our financials, here's the executive team. You could
disclosures, disclaimers, the very important. I'm an attorney, so I'm a stickler about disclosures and disclaimers and making sure that information is provided in its most clear form and most understandable manner, not in legalese, right? Because, you know, I'm sure you've talked about this on your show many times. One of the problems is that we use language sometimes that's intimidating to people, mm-hmm. and it scares people away, and they don't want to participate because they may not understand some legalese. Mm-hmm. Well, not at our show. We're going to make sure everything is in language that no matter where you live, no matter what level of education you've attained, no matter your socioeconomic strata, we want you to be able to understand. And then if you choose to participate after that, that's your personal decision.
Okay, so we've got about 30 seconds left. I would love for you to say, this is how you want to get a hold of me if you want to participate in the show. Yep. Here's how you go to the club. Here's how you do this. This is when it's Aaron, and here's where to go to see it.
First of all, thank you for having me on, and thanks for the chance to share about Unicorn Hunters. If you want to go sign up for the Unicorn Hunters Investors Club, unicornhunters.com, please do it. Get ready. It's free for this year. It may not be free in 2022. This is the time to join the club. And that'll be your chance to participate if you choose to invest after you watch the episodes of these potential unicorns. If you want to be considered as a potential unicorn for the show in season two, please write me an email at moe@movela.com. moe@movela.com. Steve, thank you so much. Please, you watch the show and let's get back together again after season one so we can talk about the five or six.
Actually, I was just thinking, so if you're coming out in May, I'd like to see in like September, October, and then we would come back and talk about it again. I'd like to talk about season two. So
absolutely.
With that, Mo, thank you so much. This has been fun. It's been wonderful. Wish you a world of success with the Unicorn Hunters.
Thank you, Steve. See you at unicornhunters.com. Take care.
I'll see you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve show.
Don't let your financial woes keep you up at night and prevent you from living a life of financial and personal freedom. Hi, I'm Steve Sexton, host of the Saving with Steve show. We're going to be talking about the ins and outs of money, those financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars, causing stress, keeping you up at night. We're going to talk about money, tax reductions, saving more, spending less, your investments, risk management, retirement, and everything associated with you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. So if you've ever dreamed of living a life of financial and personal freedom, you owe it to yourself and your family to tune into the Saving with Steve show. Join me, Steve Sexton, on the Saving with Steve show as we talk about everything under the sun when it comes to money. To learn more about the show, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us. Savingwithsteve.us. We'll see you soon.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve Show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton.
Hello, welcome back to the show. That was Mo Vella. He was talking to us about unicorn hunters and about bringing investing to the masses. You can invest as little as $100 or as much as you like in a pre-IPO that they're going to show on the show. They've got big time people from the U.S. Secretary of Treasury to big time investors to, you just got to go check it out because it's something special. Right after this, we're going to be talking to Andrew Ragusa about the real estate market. And right now, let's talk about the number one question that everybody wants to answer. How much do I need to retire? Now, the thing here is this. Retirement isn't an unsolvable question. It's also not a precise calculation. You need to be looking at it a couple times a year, and everything needs to be tracked. And use what I'm telling you as a rule of thumb, because it's going to help you get there. Now, there's four issues that you need to be considering. One, how much will you spend when you retire? The rule of thumb is about 80% of your pre-retirement income when you leave the job. Now, this is pretty flexible, but the reason why I say 80% is because you're not going to be paying in towards your income in retirement the government pays you. In the U.S., it's Social Security. In England, it's something else. You could be receiving a pension. On top of that, you're not going to be contributing to your retirement plans. Void a pandemic, you're not going to be buying new clothes as much, dry cleaning bills, commuting expenses, and all that kind of stuff. So you're looking at about 80%. So if you have $50,000 as an annual income, so I'm going to need $40,000 to live on in retirement. My government pension pays me $24,000 a year, which means I'm going to need $16,000 a year. That's going to come from my retirement accounts. Now, we have to keep in mind that when it comes from the retirement accounts, it's going to get taxed. So we need to take out a little more than $16,000 to compensate for the tax we're going to pay so we can get our $40,000. A couple things you need to consider. You want to calculate in, hey, that first couple of years of retirement, a lot of people like to travel. In fact, that's the number one expense in retirement over and above daily living expenses. Top of that, people buy new cars, remodel the home, the whole shot. None of that's a problem as long as you build it into your budget and plan for it. And the reality is that things don't put you in the poorhouse. Your medical expenses are another thing that's going to happen. In the United States, you're going to be Medicare Part D. It's $148, paying 20% of the bill. Total cost for an average couple is about $295,000. In the UK, hey, you're going to have things like long-term care expenses and many other things if when it comes to medical expenses. Finally, there's the equation of, do you leave your assets when you walk out in life to the ones you love or charity or church? Whatever it is, it's fine. It just requires you a much higher savings rate than a plan that simply wants you to have your money last as long as you do. The second issue you need to be concerned about is how much you will earn on your savings. Quite frankly, nobody knows how much your stocks and mutual funds are going to earn or your bonds, their savings accounts over next 20 years. But if you look at Morningstar and you go back to 1926, Great Depression, the whole shot, stocks averaged 10.29%. If you look at bonds, 5.33%, treasuries, 3%. I want to caution you there. Stocks and mutual funds and ETFs are going to do their thing. But when you start looking at bonds, because of all the quantitative easing, all the money the International Monetary Fund has put into the European economy, interest rates are quite low. In fact, some countries, they're negative interest rates. So when you take a look at bonds, those bonds aren't paying very much. So you want to look at other items or other things that are safe that can help you get there, especially if you're looking at that modern portfolio theory of 60% stock and 40% bonds. That brings to the next point, rates of return. How should I calculate a rate of return if I'm trying to figure out how much money I'm going to need in retirement? First of all, you want to make sure you outpace inflation. If inflation's 3% and you add another 2.5% on that, you want to look at a growth rate at about 5.5%, maybe 6%. But if you're looking at a 7, 8, 9, 10, 12% growth rate, that's probably unrealistic. And if you do looking at that, and it's not likely that your plan will reach that or meet that rate of return goal, you'd run out of money early. The reality is you don't want to aim too high. Aim a little low. You'll save a little bit more money. You'll have a better retirement. Now, the third thing we need to think about, hey, how long are we going to live? All right. No one really knows the answer, but it's best to look at averages. You're a 65-year-old male, you have a probability to live until you're 83. Females, 85 and a half. Most people, when they're doing their retirement calculations, err on the short side. You don't want to do this. Why? Because the last thing you want to do is go into the doctors and have them say, hey, you're real healthy. You're going to live another 5 years, and you only got 1 year left of money. So don't set your passing away age at 81, 82, 83. You want to look at the rule of thumb of 90. Now, if you're somebody like me, where I have relatives that pass away at 95, 97, I'm going to be looking at age 100. So you want to make sure you do your retirement planning properly. It's never too late to do this. If you're retired, you want to look at doing that. Next, how much can you withdraw from savings each year? Hey, according to modern portfolio theory, that's about 4%, providing you have a portfolio of 60% stocks, 40% bonds. Now, again, I want to preface this by saying one big thing. You have savings rates. I'm talking bank rates. I'm talking bond rates. They're not very great right now. I mean, they're 2.5%, 3% on the bonds. You might be getting 0.10. If you're in Europe, you're getting less than that. So it's important to look at other safe items like fixed index annuities to get the rate of return you need to fit that 60-40. On top of that, if you have a bucket full of growth and a bucket of safety like that fixed index annuity, you can look at a sequence of distributions to protect your returns, reduce your risk, and create larger longevity with your assets. And here's how you do that. During the times when the market is up, you would want to focus on withdrawing the money that you're looking to spend from that growth bucket, that stocks and mutual fund bucket. And then you look at that safe bucket and you let it grow while everything in the market is growing, okay? And then when the market goes down, goes negative, that's when you take it out of the safe bucket. You keep taking it out of the safe bucket until that growth bucket recovers, and then you start taking it out of the growth bucket. By doing so, you could extend the longevity of your money by 20, 30, and as much as 40%, providing you watch the risk. That's how you want to look at it when it comes to making sure that you know how much you need to retire and what you need to do. So with that, I want to thank you for joining us for this segment. We're going to be back with another one. We're going to have Andrew Ragusa talking about the real estate market and what to do to make sure your offer gets accepted. Be right back.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve Show.
Don't let your financial woes keep you up at night and prevent you from living a life of financial and personal freedom. Hi, I'm Steve Sexton, host of the Saving with Steve Show. We're going to be talking about the ins and outs of money, those financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars, causing stress, keeping you up at night. We're going to talk about money, tax reductions, saving more, spending less, your investments, risk management, retirement, and everything associated with you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. So if you've ever dreamed of living a life of financial and personal freedom, you owe it to yourself and your family to tune into the Saving with Steve Show. Join me, Steve Sexton, on the Saving with Steve Show as we talk about everything under the sun when it comes to money. To learn more about the show, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us, savingwithsteve.us. We'll see you soon.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve Show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton.
Hey, welcome back to the Saving with Steve Show. Hey, we just interviewed Mo Vella and his new show, The Unicorn Hunters. We talked about how much you need to retire And now we've got some real interesting information. We talked about this a little earlier. We got a crazy real estate market, according to Redfin. First time in history, homes are selling at above list price. And it's important to know, you've got to have your offer stand out if you're going to be that buyer. On the seller side, it's interesting as well. And that's why we have Andrew Ragusa here to walk us through it. Many of you probably heard of Andrew Ragusa because he's always talking about real estate, whether it's radio, TV, media, the whole shot. He's a coach. He's a trainer, trains other brokers. He's a CEO of Remy Realty in Plainview, New York. He's got tons of licenses, whether you're accredited buyer, short sale, foreclosures. He's ready for any market. This just means he's got a lot of experience, and we're lucky to have him. Andrew, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Steve. I appreciate being here.
Yeah, I actually appreciate you being here because when we booked you for the show, my next door neighbor actually put his house on the market. And so, you know, Zillow ran his house at about $830,000. For kicks and giggles, he listed it for $975,000, had 15 showings, 7 offers, and it sold for $1.1111 million. It's crazy. There's a couple of factors there. We live on a golf course and we're next to the best school district and all that stuff, but it's mind-blowing what's happening there out there. Could you shed some light on why this is occurring? How long do you think it might last? That type of stuff.
Sure. Where is most of your audience? Is it spread out around the United States?
Yes.
Okay. So generally speaking, there's been a lot of movement away from densely populated areas. So, you know, I'm here in New York and there's a lot of movement away from Manhattan out towards suburban areas, a lot of movement the other direction towards New Jersey, suburban areas. And the same things are happening in every other state. Wherever there was dense populations, people started to spread out. It was originally motivated by, you know, a lot of things, including political unrest. And then you have pandemic and then remote work. And remote work, I think, is the actual biggest injection of influence because for the first time, a lot of people are now saying, hey, I don't need to be here. I could be anywhere. And they're going to take advantage of that and space out. I have, for example, I have some clients that moved from San Francisco to North Carolina. And I got to tell you, my buddy Steve, he bought a 4-acre estate on the side of a hill in the middle of nowhere. He has to drive 30 minutes to get to the supermarket. Is that ideal for everybody? No, but he wanted that. And the guy works for Reddit. He works for the big website Reddit, and he makes plenty of money. He makes really well for himself, and he's completely remote. And there's a lot of people like that, that their careers completely changed. With that being said, they're adjusting to a new lifestyle. And all of a sudden, that same demand that was building up the prices in the cities is now building up the prices in the suburbs.
Oh, wow. It's interesting because we're also seeing, you know, I'm located in California. I'm a financial consultant, so I have a number of people that are actually moving out of state to other states with different tax situations, probably like what's happening in New York. But on top of that, they are moving to the remote side because their company does not plan to bring people back into the office.
It's true.
And that's going to create a different market when it comes to commercial real estate. But yeah.
Yeah. You know, I have a prediction. This is purely skeptical, right? I'm just
skeptical. Okay.
I have a prediction that a lot of those buildings that are in Manhattan that were tons of office space, just levels and levels and levels of office space, they have to make some sort of compensation if these businesses are not going to be going full time. Even if they come back to the city, they're not going to need as much space. Mm-hmm. It just is what it is. Like, people are going to be permanent in some circumstances, remote. So with that being said, there has to be some sort of adjustment. I think it would be very realistic to see these buildings be converted into mixed use buildings, because they're doing that in other parts of the world. For example, in Shanghai, they have these big, big buildings that are skyscrapers, just like we have here in Manhattan. And on the top floor is the like residential, and the middle floor is like commercial. On the bottom floor is retail and stores and all this stuff. And the whole building services the community inside that one big building. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty commonplace. So as far as efficiency is concerned, it would be a smart move to make some use out of that space. And who knows, maybe if they transform these buildings and turn them into something of that nature, people will say, okay, that is convenient. Because I think one of the biggest things that people are looking for right now is convenience. So if they make that building convenient to live in, where they have the retail on the bottom, the, you know, all the food, everything's there, restaurants, they have the gym in the building, they have the workspace in the building, and they have the living in the building. These are very big buildings, so obviously they can do a lot. That, I think, would bring people back. So we'll see where it goes, you know?
You know what? Have you ever been to the John Hancock building in Chicago?
No, I haven't.
Okay, so they actually have a mall in there, food, top stores, a restaurant in the middle. There's obviously a bunch of apartments, and that could be the model moving forward. Obviously, there's some companies that are going to think that, hey, we've got to keep the collaboration going and keep everybody in the building. And there's others that say, we just don't need that. And quite frankly, even in my business, I have people who I'm 100 miles away from half of my staff.
Right.
And that happened a year before the pandemic. And I'm just thankful because I didn't have to send anybody home. Makes it weird for the office being, you know, one or two people in here and that's it, but that's okay. I can live with that.
You're not the only one either. I mean, a lot of places, even like major healthcare organizations, banks, any sort of service-based industry always had an IT staff. They had HR, payroll, all the administrative things don't necessarily need to be on site 24/7 anymore. So I think this is the phenomenon that's going to have the longest long-term impact. We will recover from pandemics. We will recover from political nonsense, but remote work is not leaving.
I actually agree with you. I think there's many things. When we saw 9/11, the tech tumble, all that did is expedited technology that was working its way into the market that might have took 5 years, it took one. Yeah. And here probably went faster. I mean, my dad had never been on Skype or Zoom or anything like that. And I helped him through his Skype call and his first Zoom call. And now he's doing it all the time with his buddies. Yeah. In fact, he's 85 and just got his first iPhone. And, you know, here he is as a tech guy. And that probably would have never happened if this didn't occur. So
forced to level up.
That's right. People are. They have no choice. Now, and then the first part of the show, I think it's really important. Housing prices are going well, and just based off a list price, things are selling more than that. So yeah. The first question is, how would somebody who's actually selling their house, what's the important things that they need to do to make sure they get the most for their property in this market?
Steve, there's one very important point that I want to make, and this is the most immediate thing jumps to mind every single time someone asks me this question. They get, this is the most important thing. It's paramount to anything else. You can make all of the little changes here and there, off these little, do these little updates, paint the walls, do this. That doesn't matter. As long as you do this one thing, you will get the maximum value. And that one thing is to make sure you price it correctly. Do not get greedy. This is what's happening. Let's say a house is worth $500,000. If you list with a realtor who's good at what they do, they're going to tell you, we're going to put that house on market at $500,000. And then there will be a bidding war. People will fight over it, and it will go over asking by a lot. It'll go over asking if people want it, and you will make the maximum dollar value. You could even find yourself in a situation where some of these buyers are paying so far over asking that they're willing to pay above appraisal value. They might not get approved for the full loan, but they see how much demand is here. And they know if they don't pay the difference between the loan and the promise that they made, they're going to lose it to the next guy, right? Mm-hmm. That's what happens in a good, strong bidding war. And that happens when you price the property correctly. Now, here's the mistake that a lot of people make is that they think the market's hot. Everything's on fire right now. I'm going to price my property at 550 or 575 because I know people will pay more. And they know it's only worth 500,000. Well, even in this market, it's still happening. You can log on to the MLS and pull up tons of data. I've done it 100 times already. There are still properties that sit still for 100, 200 days. They're not moving, and they have to keep dropping the price, keep dropping the price, keep dropping the price until people start showing up. Once people start coming, then they get sold, and they don't always go over where they would have gone over if they had just done it right in the first place. The Achilles heel of all real estate sales is time on market. So the longer you sit, the lower the offers go. And it's the first question any buyer asks, how long has this house been on the market? Does it make sense?
Yeah, it totally does. Because I've actually seen that before this market. A couple of years back, I had a friend that every realtor said, you're out of your mind. And it just sat and sat and sat and never sold it. I think that really makes sense. What's the number two there?
just to kind of drive that point home before, I want to make sure people understand too. Imagine there was a car show, okay, and they just put up an antique car, a car that appreciates in value. And you have all these collectors who want to come to the car show, right? But they know the date, they know the time, and then all of a sudden the car show releases the starting bid. And it's a number that's so far out there that all those people who wanted this car basically, I'm not going, right? It's the same principle.
I saw that on Barrett Jackson this weekend.
you want these people to show up to your house. You want them to see, if they're going to shop online and see the price is absurd, then they're going to not show up, basically, right?
So the funny part, the reason why I'm laughing is after this car rolled away and the reserve wasn't done, the guy goes, yeah, that wasn't going to sell at that price anyways.
You see what I'm saying? So here's tip number two. So I don't keep driving the same point home. Here's tip number two. Try using an escalation clause in your offer. So for those of you who don't know what that is, let's say you have a house that's $500,000. They're going to make an offer for $500,000 with a $25,000 escalation clause built in. What that means is if someone else comes in with an offer and they say, okay, here's 505, well, now you're the next highest bidder because your offer became 506. All right. So then the next person comes in, they offer 510. You're still the highest bidder because now your offer is 511. You have that $25,000 cushion that's going to escalate every time a higher offer comes in. So that can help you stand out amongst people.
Oh, that's good to know. That's good to know. We're going to take a break right now. Stick with us. We'll be right back. We got more real estate with Andrew Ragusa. Great information. Stay with us.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve show.
Don't let your financial woes keep you up at night and prevent you from living a life of financial and personal freedom. Hi, I'm Steve Sexton, host of the Saving with Steve show. We're going to be talking about the ins and outs of money, those financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars, causing stress, keeping you up at night. We're going to talk about money, tax reductions, saving more, spending less, your investments, risk management, retirement, and everything associated with you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. So if you've ever dreamed of living a life of financial and personal freedom, you owe it to yourself and your family to tune into the Saving with Steve show. Join me, Steve Sexton, on the Saving with Steve show as we talk about everything under the sun when it comes to money. To learn more about the show, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us, savingwithsteve.us. We'll see you soon.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton.
Welcome back to the Saving with Steve show. We're here with Andrew Ragusa. We've been talking about the ins and outs of real estate, and he just dropped a truth bomb on us about marketing your property properly by actually putting a realistic price there so people can bid and bid and bid and that work can go up and you can make a lot of money off your house and sell it for the highest amount. And he said that was more important than any paint, any shrubbery,
anything else,
little knickknacks. So yeah. That's awesome. Andrew, welcome back to the show. I'm super glad to have you here because the pearls of wisdom are unbelievable. And I keep laughing because I've seen it. Yeah. I just go, so that's what that was. Here's the next thing. This is a crazy market. Everything's selling above asking price. If you're putting in the offer, what are the four tips that you give somebody to make sure that they're going to have their offer stand out and have the best opportunity to get that house?
Sure. I believe one of them was the escalation clause. Another one that we do is that you could take the house as is, meaning you could still have yourself a home inspection because you do want to know what the property is about. I would have a home inspection always, never skip that in any circumstance. But sometimes we go to the seller and say, hey, look, we're going to do a home inspection, but it's either going to be a yes and no answer, right? We're essentially going to say, we're going to take it or we're not going to take it. We're not going to ask you to fix anything. We're not going to ask you to do anything, especially in a market where there's multiple bids, because they just go to the next person and not do any work. I mean, people look for the route of least resistance at all times. They're always looking for the paths of least resistance. So if your offer comes with all these contingencies and all these built-in things that have to be done, chances of getting it to be the one that gets accepted is a lot less. Mm-hmm. Right? So we want to just do.
When somebody does the home inspection, what are things that somebody would look for if you're going to say, hey, I'm going to take it as is? What would just kill a deal that somebody couldn't fix rather easily or inexpensively?
So let's say you have a house that is on the older side, okay? If you have a house that you know needs to be renovated, it's got outdated kitchens, bathrooms, floors, walls, everything's got to be replaced, roof's old, you know, I wouldn't advise going in and saying, hey, I want you to change the roof, or I want you to fix this kitchen or fix this bathroom. That house is already in beat-up condition. In those circumstances, asking for things that are reasonably expected, such as mechanical functions of the home, is totally fine. It's like, for example, it is reasonable to assume and expect that the seller will transfer a house to you with a working boiler. Right? So if the boiler is broken, I would ask for that. Hey, I need you guys to get the boiler up and running before I move in. If it's completely salvageable, right? If it has to be replaced, that's a whole other ball game. We might just say we're going to lower our price and replace it ourselves. We'll figure it out. But you know, the mechanics of the house is kind of like really important. So the heat, electricity, plumbing, if there's any leaks, all that stuff should absolutely be addressed in the older style homes. Mm-hmm. If you're buying a newer home, you want the mechanicals covered, definitely, right? But in a newer home, chances are the problems of mechanicals coming up are less, right? It's just less likely.
So Andrew, hold on a second. When you say a newer home, what's a newer home?
So like recently renovated, within, you know, you walk in and the kitchen's bathroom's done. How about this? It's always, first of all, you're right. It's always relative based on exactly what you think is acceptable to you. So mm-hmm. I'm just going to describe it like this. You walk in, you say, okay, I can move in. I'm move-in ready.
Okay.
All right. So if you're move-in ready with the home and you're just saying like, you know what, I don't need to change the bathroom. I don't need to change the kitchen. Fine. Here's a circumstance where the home inspector, let's say they bring something and they say, hey, you know, by the way, there's a crack here in this cabinet, or there's a chip on the wood floor or whatever. You might say, hey, would you mind replacing that? It's not a big fix anyway. It's just a cosmetic little thing. The point being is that in the older style home that needs lots of renovation, asking for cosmetic repairs is kind of pointless. Mm-hmm. Ask for mechanical important repairs. In the home that is completely move-in ready and livable, or you're not going to make any changes to it, you're not going to update the kitchens, bathrooms, then ask for little things if you need to. You know, if it's really important to you, do it.
Okay, so the little ticky-tacky things and somebody goes, okay, fine.
You want to scale it to what kind of house you're buying. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. No, I get that. I think people need to understand, because my house is 17 years old. So is that new or old? But you're really saying, hey, when's the last time they updated the kitchen? Right. And that should be the reality check. So if it's 3 years since they updated the kitchen, the family room, all that, that's relatively new.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like,
perfect.
That's what I'm saying. Like, you have a kitchen that was done in the last 2 years, but you notice that there's a chip in one of the tiles. And all right, maybe they have that tile sitting in the garage or in the attic that's somewhere around, right? Maybe they could ask them, hey, would you mind just replacing this tile? It's not going to be expensive. It's not a big deal. And you make it ready for yourself. So in that circumstance, I don't see them giving you a problem.
That's great. Now, we talked about the appraisal, the inspection. What other things people should be looking at when they're setting up that offer?
So a big trend, this is happening a lot in New Jersey right now. And it's actually happening in Long Island as well, but not as much as New Jersey. New Jersey, I can't believe how many people are doing this. What they're doing is they're actually making offers with a guaranteed out-of-pocket amount. So let's say we find a house that's $500,000 and you agree to pay them $515,000. Okay, so we're over by $15,000. Now, the appraiser comes and the appraiser says, sorry, I think this house is only worth $510,000. Well, now there's a $5,000 missing that you're not going to get in your mortgage. So what the buyers are doing at this point is they're saying, I'm guaranteeing you $515,000 with up to $15,000 to cover that loss, right? So if that appraiser came back and said, sorry, this house is only worth $500,000, I will pay the $15,000 difference. So they guarantee an amount above. What it does is it kind of takes the worry away from the seller. Appraisal issues is a big concern to a seller right now, especially in a bidding war. You're going to be in a bidding war, people might pay $50,000, $60,000 over your property. That doesn't mean they're going to get approved for that loan.
Mm-hmm.
So you can make it easier pill for people to swallow, saying, I'm going to offer you $525,000 with a $10,000 guarantee above appraisal value. So no matter what, they know they're going to get $10,000 above appraisal.
Okay, that's always good. When you're focused on your monthly payment, help us understand that.
So that's really the most important part, which we really focus a lot on this in the brokers, to teach buyers how to buy a home. Because just like anything else, like, would you board a plane with a pilot, you know, never flown before? Would you ride a bus with a bus driver who's never driven before? So how could you expect the first time home buyer or any home buyer to just kind of know what to do in the moment when it strikes? One of the things we teach people is your monthly payment is basically your main focus. Let's say we make an offer on a house that's $500,000. Okay. If you're using a mortgage, you're not paying $500,000. The truth is, over 30 years, you're paying over $1 million. With interest, you might be 700, 800,000 or even $1 million with interest. It's usually like 2.5 times the amount, right? So with that being said, that monthly payment is a promise that you're making for the next 30 years. As long as you can afford that monthly payment, you can afford to live in the home. And this is the interesting thing that a lot of people don't know. Every $10,000 above in each offer. So let's say we start at $500,000. Let's say that's $3,000 a month. If we move up to $510,000, that could make a very small difference in monthly payment. That monthly payment might now change to $3,030 a month or $3,035 a month, depending on the interest rate. Interest rates right now are about 3.25. So I'm going to assume that it's a $35 increase for every $10,000. With that being said, let's say you come out with a budget and you say, okay, I can afford up to $525 because I know that's going to be $3,200 a month. Well, $535 is only $3,235 a month. With that being said, it's a small increase. You see what I'm saying? So let's say you're in a bidding war. If you had to go up a little more than you want to, sometimes there's still that wiggle room in the budget because it's only a $35 increase in the monthly payment. If you could afford the monthly payment, you can live comfortably.
So really what you're saying is saying, hey, look, understand this. If you're bidding $500,000 and the bid's $510,000 or $520,000, just by going up to $530,000, all you've really done is add $105 a month to your payment.
Basically, yeah.
And if you can live with that,
your payment changes by a small amount.
Yeah, so you're good. Okay, that's good to know. It's some people, oh my God, I paid too much. No, that's great. That's right. Now, one of the things I wanted you to explain is don't wait for a market crash.
It was one of my favorite things to talk about because a lot of people love to go around talking about there's a crash coming, there's a crash coming, there's a crash coming. So let's examine that. Let's see what happens when people do that. First of all, there's always that guy who says there's a crash coming and he'll be saying it for 1, 2, 3 years and then a crash happens. They look back, see, I told you so. Right? But it took 3 years, 2 years, however long it took, right? Even if it took a year, no one can really accurately predict when that happens. But if you look at the growth of the housing market in the United States over the past, let's say, 100 years, you have so much data showing you that all markets are cyclical in nature. They're always going up and down and moving. And the chart goes like this and it goes back up. And it goes like this and it goes back up. And you need proof of that. Just go ask your parents what they bought their house for in the 1950s versus what houses are selling now. So every time there's been a crash and there's been multiple crashes, I'm 36 years old. I've lived through a few. Okay. And everyone's going to live through more. Everybody's going to live through them. And every time there was a crash, we've surpassed that crash and we came up, recovered and surpassed the point of where it fell.
Yeah. Perfect example. Perfect example of my folks' house. They bought it for 35. It's worth over $1 million. And there's been a lot more than just a few crashes in their time period. If somebody wants to get a hold of you, how do they go about doing that?
First of all, you can find me on Facebook, Andrew Ragusa. Find me on Instagram, Andrew Ragusa. On Instagram, we show a lot of investment opportunities and raise money through Instagram. So if you're looking to invest in properties, this is a great way to find me. And you can go to remiagency.com. That's the brokerage. You can get in touch with me through there as well.
Okay, so they can get in touch through the brokerage if they want coaching and help as a realtor.
You go on my Instagram, there's a link in my bio, you can click that. And in there, you should find a link to the coaching sessions where you can sign up. We can talk about how to flip houses, how to do buy and holds. I run real estate funds where I invest other people's money in real estate. And I grow it for them and I give them returns on their capital investment. Just like a financial advisor does with stock market, I do it real estate. So if you want to learn how to raise money, flip houses, do all this stuff using other people's money, that's the stuff I teach. I also teach real estate, how to be a realtor, how to run the business. Whatever people need.
I want to thank you for joining us, Andrew. This is Andrew Ragusa. Get a hold of him if you need his help. Wonderful insights. Appreciate having you. I hope you have a wonderful day and stay healthy.
Thank you so much. It was fun being here. Thanks, Steve.
You're welcome. Appreciate it. Hey, that's it today for Saving with Steve. I want to thank you all for joining us. We had Mo Vella talking about unicorn hunters. We had Andrew Ragusa. He was talking about what's going on with the real estate and if you're buying what you need to do and if you're selling what you need to do to make sure your offer gets sold. We'll look forward to seeing you next week. Stay happy, stay healthy.
Thank you for joining us for the Saving with Steve show, hosted by Steve Sexton. To learn more about the show and how to become a guest or sponsor, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us. Join us again next time as we continue to talk about everything under the sun that relates to you having a healthier, happier relationship with money. This has been the Saving with Steve Show, hosted by Steve Sexton.